The Complete Grouch's Guidelines. Grouch's Guideline Number 1. Other people's opinions of you are irrelevant, even their good opinions. Guideline Number 2. Our ability to think and feel is God's way of talking to us. Grouch's Guideline Number 3. Anything that exists is observable. Anything that can be thought about can be understood. Anything that is true can be proven. Grouch's Guideline Number 4. Nothing is impossible. Well, almost nothing. Grouch's Guideline Number 5. Anything, good or bad, upon which you focus your attention will grow and flourish. Grouch's Guideline Number 6. All of spirit is anywhere. Grouch's Guideline Number 7. Life is a mirror and your consciousness is the object it reflects. Grouch's Guideline Number 8. Understanding why you're miserable isn't the same thing as being happy. Grouch's Guideline Number 9. Your present experience doesn't have dibs on your future just because it got here first. Grouch's Guideline Number 10. Be pleasant and try not to spill your cocktail. Grouch's Guideline Number 11. You're not a problem person. You're a person who has problems. Grouch's Guideline Number 12. You're not a personality. You just have a personality. Grouch's Guideline Number 13, which is corollary to Grouch's Guideline Number 1. Your opinions of other people are irrelevant, even when you're right. Grouch's Guideline Number 14. Anything upon which you focus your attention grows and flourishes. Grouch's Guideline Number 15. There's no such thing as more God or less God. Grouch's Guideline Number 16. Nothing you've ever done has ever pleased God. Nothing you've done has ever displeased God either. Grouch's Guideline, the last. There is an infinite presence that creates your life as a mirror to your beliefs by a law of its own nature.
When I started thinking about, okay, this is a subject I really like to talk about, but how am I going to approach it? There, you know, I really, as I mentioned, haven't had the science of mind training in the particular subject. But do I go and use that approach? Do I talk about the law of attraction and the various corollaries to the law and principle? And I thought, well, I might really screw that up. Because I have had that training, and I'm not sure I'd put it all in the right place. But, you know, I don't think it would matter, even if I'd taken that approach. But because almost any subject that you're dealing about in life, whatever it is, the approach is pretty much the same. And we'll come back to that in just a little bit. So I thought, well, I'm just sort of going to organize some of the thoughts of the heart and just share those with us, and I said, okay, now where do I start with this? How do I define abundance? You know, what does it mean? And you know, most of us think we probably have an idea of what abundance is, but it can become just a little bit of a challenge anytime we start to really define our terms, what we mean by it. And the first thing that came to my mind, well, it's not just about money. It's not. Abundance is a piece of the picture. I mean, it's a piece of it. I know I've traveled a lot, and they're basically two universal languages. One of them's music, and the other one's legal tender. So it isn't that money is without meaning. It is, and it's a part of the abundance equation. But you know, you this is where I'm jumping off into one of those little things. You probably remember from your basic psychology course or reading almost anywhere about psychology, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, it starts with basically needing shelter, you know, and then ultimately to self-actualization, knowing who you are and what you're all about. And so it's perfectly logical thought process from a psychological perspective, and pretty much arrives at the same place we arrive at in our faith. Mm-hmm. In that one unity, that self-actualization. So where do you start with abundance? If you're trying to get on a path to it, well, the first thing is defining what it is. And so I can only share with you my definitions of what I think mm-hmm. abundance is. And as I've started to say, it doesn't begin with money. I remember that little song I told you about, the peace and joy and love and harmony. Well, those are where it starts. You know, if you got lots of people who are millionaires and billionaires who are miserable. And there's countless stories of millionaires and millionaires' heirs committing suicide and lives of misery. You can be rich. You can be rich applying principle. You can be rich. And you can start with money and wealth and know that you're going to do it. And you'll do it. You can do it. You know, you can do it. Because you follow the same kinds of steps, whether you believe it or not. It doesn't matter, by the way, whether or not you believe anything. Cause and effect still happens.
Amen.
It still happens. What you think is what you are. And so some people just have a knack of thinking rich, and they are. And there's, you know, I'm not faulting that. It's not a criticism of it. It's just that we're talking about abundance, not monetary wealth. And abundance that doesn't begin with peace and harmony and joy and love is, well, it's rich misery. Of course, some people do say money can't buy happiness, but it sure can make being miserable a lot of fun. Maybe it can. I don't know. But it sure. I mean, if you already got peace and joy and all those things, you barely notice it. That hey, you know that there's money does. I mean, fun is even more fun when it's surrounded by love and all those other pieces of your life. So they're all part of the path. But I know that we want to talk about how we get the whole package. And I have a quote. Yeah, I got a couple of quotes that I'll refer to. And I tell you, you know, every time I talk and I start looking, I say, well, first thing I usually ask, well, what did Ernest Holmes have to say about this? Because, you know, he didn't have something to say about everything, but it's kind of like you were talking about your music. You didn't find a song on abundance. Oh, but you did. Mm. Oh, but you did. Because abundance is a state of mind. And your song is about that state of mind. Be ready for change. And we'll refer to that again a little bit later, if you don't mind. But this comes from... At the end of this, I'm going to do a little meditation. It won't be quite as elegant, I assure you, as Ernest Holmes's meditations are. But I'm just going to read you something that's an extract from one of his meditations on abundance here. That makes a point for me. All good is now mine and is now manifest in my experience. I do not compete with anyone, for I am and remain forever myself. This self is united with all selves, but it's always an individual and unique self. There is that in me which all people recognize is worthwhile and desirable.
and everyone whom I meet loves this self of mine and recognizes its worth. I draw all towards me, and those whom I can benefit and those who can benefit me are irresistibly drawn towards me. I do not strain, will, or coerce. I know. The truth makes me free from the fear of poverty or bondage and emancipates me from the thought of limitation. The point I want to pull out is there are about 3 points in here that all come back out in this about what the whole thing is about. He just kind of summarized it in 3 or 4 sentences there. But it takes a little thinking to see just what he said. The big thing that leaps off this page to me is it's not about abundance. It's not about poverty. Well, that's obvious, isn't it? It's not about poverty. It's not about acknowledging poverty or neediness or limitation. It's about going beyond those things. What you think is what you are. If you think you're not loved, you're going to find yourself unloved. You notice in here he touches all these things. Not only is he acknowledging his own self-worth, he's acknowledging the fact that his self-worth is acknowledged by others. Not that it matters, according to me. But it's definitely not about limitation. So the first thing that we need, and then I'm going to talk just briefly about my personal life a number of years ago. Now, a lot of us learn in our youth some pretty bad habits. I mean, we don't even know we're learning them. Some of us are raised in an atmosphere of poverty and neediness, and we think that's where we are. And some of those thoughts, even though we may go off and get an education and start working, feelings of need and of limitation continue to haunt us. And we're not even always aware that that's what's happening to us. So in order to really experience abundance, we have to open our minds to what limitations are hanging around in there that are precluding it. And you know, a lot of years ago, I mean, I walked away from my life. I literally walked away from my life because I realized I was hung up on feeling needy and feeling like somebody was going to have to help me. And I realized, why am I expecting somebody to help me? I've got it. I can do it myself. Now, admittedly, I hadn't got quite at the time gotten to Ernest Holmes yet, but the feeling was there. The feeling was there is that I don't need this, and I don't need anybody. I don't need anybody to tell me I can't afford to have that particular car. You got no business having that car because you can't afford that. I don't need that. I can afford the goddamn car if I want it. I'm sorry, did I say that? That's how I felt. Okay, I had a cash flow program problem. I did have a cash flow problem. Couldn't buy the car right away. In fact, it was probably about 12 years later before I bought it. But it was the same year, car. So we've got to find what those limitations are and learn to let go of. Now, there's not enough time here to go through the whole process of letting go of those limitations, but I want you to know you can become aware of them. And you can learn to let them go. And just exercising the principles of New Thought, of Ernest Holmes, of Science of Mind, any system that makes you responsible for your thoughts and lets you let go of them and trust the thought within you that's taking you in the right direction will work. Mm-hmm. So it's not about poverty. It's about letting go of everything that wants to keep you at a level where you are. If you feed, and I found this from my own life, if you feed your thought processes with what you don't have, or dwelling on what you don't have. Yeah, there's a little story that you probably read it somewhere. It's a professor, a philosophy professor, who's making a point about life, and he takes a big jar and he fills it up with big rocks, pretty rocks, of course. And so he asks the class, "Is this jar full?" "Oh yeah, the jar's full." So then he takes a bunch of small pebbles and he puts them in there and shakes it, and they fall down and fill up the spaces, and the jar's looking full. He says, "Is the jar full?" "Oh yeah, the jar's full." So then he takes some sand and puts sand all down there and shakes it on quite a quantity of sand. Now this time the jar really is looking full. The sand's packed in all the cracks. "Is this jar full?" "Oh yeah, that jar is now. This time it's full." So then he takes two cups of coffee and pours them both in the jar. Well, it reaches the brim of the jar. It's pretty obvious this time it's full. Mm-hmm. And it is. When he says, "Yeah, it's full right now." And he says, the grains of sand are the little things in your life that don't matter. The big rocks that I put in there first are the important things. They're where your thoughts should be and where your focus should be. He says, "Now, you put that sand in that jar first, it's a different story, isn't it? The sand will fill it up, and you got no room for what's important." So he just makes a point of where your thoughts are and where they begin. Make sure they're focused on the right thing. And so one of the young fellows in the class says, "Well, what does the coffee represent?" I'm glad you asked that question. Says, "There's always time for a coffee with a friend." And I like that. There's always time for coffee with a friend, which leads me to a second point that I feel very strongly in about abundance. And abundance is about sharing. It's about sharing. And you probably heard me say before that the Bible has passage in it on that. Forgive me for quoting the good book, the other good book. It says, "Give, and it shall be given unto you." And it doesn't stop there. It goes on. There's another sentence. And quite often in science mind, you'll hear that quoted all the time. "Give, and it shall be given unto you." But there's a little more to the thought. Good measure, good things. Pressed down and shaken together, the jar is packed full of good things. "Shall men give unto your bosom?" Now, who are you going to give to here except to men? You give to men, men return. You give to your fellow man returns. You give to God, God returns. Everything comes back to you. You know, everything comes back to you. It's this energy thing, you know, where you focus your energy, where you vibrate, that's where you live, and that's what you are. And that's the heart for me, is the sharing of abundance. Without it, you're missing a significant part of the joy of it. It's a big item. I'll have to look at my notes. Another thought that I have about abundance, and this time it's really about money. So let's just get down to it. Money shouldn't cost you anything. Now, what the heck do I mean by that? Well, it shouldn't cost you your soul. You know, you got the story of selling your soul for wealth and fame. It shouldn't cost you anything that matters. And what am I talking about paying? I'm talking about, I just made a little list here. Shouldn't cost you relationships. Shouldn't cost you friendships. It shouldn't cost you your dignity. It shouldn't cost you your health, your intelligence. And it shouldn't cost you joy, peace, and love, and harmony. So a money given in the right frame of abundance It shouldn't cost you any of those things. And if it's costing you one of those things, you need to go back to step one again and find what are the limitations that are halting my path to abundance, because it shouldn't cost you anything. And which leads me to another one. Pardon, I'm back over in your thing again here. I was mentioning to Dave and Connie this morning about the similarities between Taoism and New Thought, Science of Mind. So I read this little quote to Grace, and she said, "Oh, okay, what's Tao?" In case you don't, I think most of us are somewhat familiar with Taoism, although few of us really are intimately involved with it, but myself included. But I like to read it because of the similarities between it and New Thought and the conclusions that they reach. They begin, I mean, with the most important concept of oneness. But they talk about, and this is where it's a little bit practical, and it gets the same kind of, I've read similar things in Science of Mind lectures, and I'm going to compare this to a quote in a Science of Mind lecture. There are three primary tasks for us on the journey of life of total abundance, on the journey to a life of total abundance. The first is to recognize the inner and outer forces that conspire to make us believe in scarcity and thus feel lack. See, that was my point. Now, I made my point before I read this, but it's a good place to start. Awareness of these factors will help us to overcome their influence over us. Kind of like a 12-step program. If you haven't figured out what's wrong and admitted it's wrong, you can't take the next 11 steps. Awareness of these factors will help us to overcome their influence over us. The second test is to cultivate a spirit of abundance in our life, celebrating the gift of life with joy and thanksgiving. Joy and gratitude. As we focus in our thoughts and actions on things that bring a feeling of connection with all life, we begin to move with the flow of the Tao. We would say with one, with spirit. In this way, we allow blessings to come to us as part of the overflow of an abundant spirit, not as things we crave and struggle for from a sense of lack or desperation. To come from lack can only bring lack. Even when we get what we think we need. On the other hand, when we come from a spirit of abundance, we attract greater abundance. Finally, as we move in the world from the spirit of abundance, we become a liberating and empowering force in the lives of those with whom we interact. This is sharing. This is what we're talking about. We help them see, not by preaching, but by example, that we all live in an abundant world and that they as well can free themselves from lack of consciousness. Together we can organize, together we can unite in spirit of abundance and create new patterns of community and social organization, new lifestyles and new ways of relating based on cooperation rather than competition. As envy, greed, and competition flow from lack, so compassion, service, and cooperation flow from a spirit of abundance. It is this spirit of abundance that will be our guide as we embark on the journey to create total abundance in our lives. Now, this part that I'm going to read now comes from it's a little bit less, but it's coming from a Science of Mind lecture on abundance. Instead of focusing on what is possible, many people spend a lot of time thinking about what they don't have. An interesting pattern develops in which they become angry or resentful over their situation which creates more limitations and barriers in their lives. I've been there. I've seen this happen with me. Identifying your limiting beliefs is a critical first step. Once you've identified what those underlying imprints and beliefs are, then you can go forward. And that's all I'll read from that. I think it makes its point of the comparison of the first steps of the path to abundance. Clear out the obstacles. Before you can plant a crop, you got to clear the field. Little thing I wrote here that is a, it's such a simple thing to say this, but abundance begins inside. It begins in you, and it radiates out. We create it. We make it. Gratitude multiplies it, and sharing is exponential. I was telling Dave again, I get here talking about it. I'm so excited. I start talking about it to whoever the first person is I come in. It's all running through my head and my mind. And I was talking about the Hubble telescope and a few other new telescopes on the surface of the Earth that are looking out into space, almost the beginning of creation. And what they're seeing are things that don't exist anymore, at least in the material way. I mean, we've been following for the last few weeks the death of a star from its supernova to shrinking back down, and it's fascinating. I mean, the star's probably not even there anymore. Maybe it is, I don't know. In this particular case, it was a binary star and was interacting with another star beside it. They really don't know what's going to happen to it. But it went supernova and just threw stuff out all over the place and spun out here. It's something else that's being created. They're not sure whether it's another star, whether it's a black hole, whether it's planets. They don't really know what's going on. These are first times. But before I get too carried away into what those telescopes are looking at, the point is, it's looking into the past. It's looking way back. And didn't I talk a little bit about quantum physics at one time, or some kind of lecture here that had to do with the new physics and its relationship to effect? One of the things that they've proven in experiments with quantum physics is that the thoughts of the observers affect the outcome, which is, you know, one of those things that just goes against standard scientific thought. Mm-hmm. They think it's going to hit here. That's where it hits. There's not necessarily a logical reason for it, because at that level we don't have precise enough formulas to predict an outcome. We have the ability to predict a range of outcomes. But the thoughts of the observers impact it. Doing the same experiment and seeing the outcome come in a double place, and it does. So, how are they doing that? You know, it's clear that to some extent, thought affects things at a quantum level. Now, of course, we believe thought affects things at a much greater level than that, a macro level, and we demonstrate it all the time. So in some sense of the word, in that moment, they're kind of looking to the future just a little bit when they say where it's going to happen. And when I meditate, I like to think of my mind's eye as a telescope. But it's not looking backwards, it's looking forward. It's looking out at and all those things that source has at its disposal, and I can focus in on things and I can say, that's mine. And we can all do that. In fact, in just a few minutes, we're going to do a little meditation together, and we'll try a little bit of that. Now, I'm probably not the most organized meditator in the world, so if my meditation goes a little stream of consciousness, feel free to do the same thing, because I may go where it goes. And indeed, you can pretty much count on that. But I'll try to keep you included in it. But just I'll probably remind myself that you're there with me. But before we start our meditation, though, I just want to go back and just reiterate one of the primary phrases in Science of Mind as you approach any problem solving thing. Is that what you think is what you are. And if you change your thinking, you'll change your life. Mm-hmm. And whatever you think about, that's where you're going. If you're not already there, you're going to get there. So when we meditate, we're going to go out together, and we're kind of going to center on source a little bit. Now, how do you center on source? Well, I don't really know the answer to that, but it's one of those things you do, you know. Source is everywhere. It's just like she read over there. I mean, everywhere you look, that's what you see. And I know, you, almost anybody of any faith, you know, likes to claim one of the attributes of God as omnipresence. Now, not ubiquity. You know, the difference between ubiquity and omnipresence, they're similar. But omnipresence really means everywhere at once, which means there's no space where it isn't. Ubiquity just means the appearance of being here. You know, like Dave could, if he were a good hypnotist, this could probably make us all think he was over there too. You know, and that's a form of ubiquity. If he could really be over there and be here at the same time, I'd be scared of him. But there's no doubt in my mind that source that we're part of is everywhere and embraces everything, and that's a good way to approach meditation of really knowing that. Mm-hmm. Have I talked long enough to meditate yet?
Yeah.
Okay. We know there's only one. That one is everywhere. That one is us. And as we relax now and we center on that one that we're a part of, and we move closer to the center to bring our awareness closer to the awareness of who we really are. As we move to that center, we're kind of looking out. Maybe we're moving backwards. We're looking out, and as we move back, we see more and more of everything that's out there. All that's a part of Source. All that God owns. And we look and we see the lights and the colors flashing by our eyes, and every once in a while we'll see a thing. And we'll recognize it. There's Dave and Connie, and they're wearing awfully heavy jackets for July. dang, it's about time. We're finally on a cruise with them. But we're not talking a whole lot because we just heard a whale song. There's a bush of strawberries, blackberries. I can't see too good right now because there's kind of all kinds of colors running around me. But I get closer and it's a bush of blackberries, all right, big juicy ones, and I'm going to have a cobbler. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one. There's a whole field of strawberries. There's more strawberries than I'm ever going to need. And I'm grateful for those strawberries. We're all there. You're all there. Not just Dave and Connie. You're all looking at different things. And you're seeing things that God has for you. They're yours. It's like those blackberries and that cruise is mine. I see the new kitchen in my house in Huntsville with my dream stove in it. I see a crowd of people in there munching the goodies just cooked on it. This is life. This is real. Those things you're seeing are real too. Remember some of them and tell us about them sometime. Claim it because it's yours. We're surrounded by love in this field. And peace and joy. We have it all. The gifts of spirit to us. We're grateful. We're extremely grateful. Thank you, Spirit. We got to get back. It's hard to leave. But let's welcome each other back.
Thank you, Phil.
It was a good lesson. Well, our ex